your argument in Moore v. Amy. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, good afternoon. James F. Harker. I'm co-counsel for the appellees, the ME defendants. And with me today, I'd like to reintroduce J. Bruce McKissick, who previously argued in this case before the Court.
Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Justice Holland. May it please the Court, William Fletcher on behalf of the appellants in this matter. On the night of March 14th of 2003, on the tarmac of the Richmond International Airport, Edward Murphy, an airplane passenger, was killed due to pilot error that caused Mr. Murphy to exit the plane and to make contact with a rotating propeller of the airplane. The pilot error was committed by the pilot in command, a gentleman by the name of Gary Amy. He and Mr. Murphy were co-employees of the News Journal Company and were on assignment in Richmond, Virginia to cover a basketball game, a basketball tournament. The issue in this case is whether or not Mr. Amy, though a co-employee of Mr. Murphy's, is he entitled to immunity under the workers' compensation statutes as a person within the same employ as Mr. Murphy, or should he be treated as a third party who would be responsible and answerable for their tortious conduct? Since this case was briefed and originally argued on May 2nd of this year, this court has handed down a decision that deals with these very issues. Only earlier this month, this court in Grabowski versus Mangler reaffirmed the notion and the legal principle that a co-employee is not entitled to automatic immunity under the workers' compensation statute, but indeed may be held liable for their tortious conduct if that conduct arises or is outside of the course and scope of the employee's employment duties. In Grabowski, the court was concerned with what is referred to as horseplay at the work site. In Grabowski, the injured party, the victim, a co-employee, had already received more than $300,000 of workers' compensation benefits. Yet, in the ruling of this court, the court held that under the facts of Grabowski, the horseplay initiated by co-employees might very well constitute conduct outside of the scope of and course of their employment. And in making that conclusion, the court specifically adopted a test offered by Professor Larson in his treatise on workers' compensation claims. And the court specifically adopted a four-pronged test. In looking at that test, much of it really embodies what this court had previously held in the Groves versus Marvel case. That is, the idea that you look at the conduct of the co-employee and is it, looking at factors, is it outside of the scope and course of the job and its duties?
Well, isn't traveling to Richmond part of the job duty?
Your Honor, there is no dispute, or at least not from our perspective, Your Honor, that traveling to Richmond indeed was activity that would fall within the course and scope of employment.
Do you agree that if Mr. Emmy had been driving a car and caused the injury, that there would be no claim here?
That is correct, Your Honor. And the reason I agree to that is because under the Marvel holding of this court, the Marvel holding stated that the conduct complained of must be of a type that is either unreasonable or not expected to occur within the course of employment.
What's unreasonable about flying a private plane, especially where the News Journal knows that Mr. Emmy has in the past flown to assignments?
Your Honor, I would first of all submit that that is not in the record. There is nothing in the record to establish affirmatively that Mr. Emmy flew to other assignments. There was an issue in the record where the defense attorney asked his own client, have you ever used a plane? And previously, it's been admitted by Mr. Amy's counsel that the use of a plane can include being a passenger. And in the little dialogue between Mr. Amy and his attorney, nowhere does Mr. Amy state that he piloted a plane for the News Journal on assignment. There is not one statement offered by Mr. Amy in this case that he can identify one location before this occurrence that he flew to as a pilot on behalf of the News Journal.
Where did this come from then? I mean, it is in the briefs, and I thought there was some reference to it in the opinion of the Superior Court.
Your Honor, I frankly don't know where it came from, but I can tell you that the pages that the defendant relies upon are found at B-58, 59, and 60. And I have read those pages, and I believe this court, in evaluating this matter previously, had pointed out to the defendants that there is no affirmative statement that he piloted a plane to any assignment prior to this one for the News Journal. There was an ambiguous statement where he was asked, have you ever used a plane? And it was admitted that use of a plane could be piloting or it could be simply as a passenger, and that was never resolved on the record. And since this is a motion for summary judgment, the inference favorable to the non-moving party that he was only a passenger would be appropriate to draw at this stage of the proceedings.
Well, as I understand it, the testimony was that he had used a plane. Glossing over for a moment whether he piloted the plane or was a passenger, and had been reimbursed for the expense.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. And again, if he is a passenger,
What part does the record support, and what part does it not support?
Your Honor, I believe the record supports that when he stated that he was using a plane, he did receive reimbursement. And he also received reimbursement when he would travel by car or some other method. The problem is there is nothing in the record that states he was paid to pilot a plane, which is what he was doing at the time.
Okay, so the key word here is pilot, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, not that he had not. There is record support for the proposition that he used a plane and that he was reimbursed for the use.
That there was a use of a plane and that he was reimbursed. But, again, as the court pointed out to the defendant, there was no affirmative statement that he piloted the plane, and there was no affirmative statement that he was paid to pilot the plane. And I might also add, Your Honor, that the defendant stated in their answering brief in this case that, indeed, on this occasion, he did not submit and was not reimbursed when piloting the plane in March of 2003 when Mr. Murphy was killed. And so there is ambiguity at best as to just what the relationship was beforehand regarding Mr. Amy and the use of an airplane. There is no ambiguity as to this aspect of it, though. It is undisputed that Mr. Amy and Mr. Murphy had participated in joint assignments on at least 100 occasions. And on not one of them, before March of 2003, did Mr. Amy pilot a plane. Some of those trips involved assignments as far away as Florida and the Carolinas, and an airplane was never involved.
With respect to Mr. Murphy having received workers' compensation benefits, why I don't see any response to the argument that that stops a claim, that you cannot make the claim that he was acting outside of his employment if you've accepted workers' compensation benefits.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the Grabowski case answers that, because in Grabowski, the victim.
Does the Grabowski case say that?
The Grabowski case specifically held that the gentleman received $300,000.
I understand. I know what the facts are. I know the facts are that the person had received workers' compensation benefits.
Yes.
And the court said it's not clear whether this was within the scope or not in terms of what the conduct was that was at issue that had caused the injury.
Yes, sir.
However, I don't recall the Grabowski case making any holding with respect to any collateral estoppel claim, perhaps because none was raised. But, other than the Grabowski case, what support do you have for the idea that you can receive workers' compensation and also claim that this was not within the scope of employment?
I think we make that claim, Your Honor, because the analysis has to be focused on each employee. In other words, first, you have to focus on at least the Industrial Accident Board or somebody dealing with the employer has to focus on whether or not the relationship of the injured person to the employer constitutes a compensable event. In other words, was his injury, did it occur within the course and scope of his employment? Then, if a third-party claim is being made and that third party is a co-employee, you then focus on the conduct of that third-party co-employee and see whether or not his conduct was within the scope and course of employment. It is our position that as a passenger, Mr. Murphy, vis-a-vis the News Journal, was within the scope and course of his employment. He was being conveyed to a work project. On the other hand, Mr. Amy is not a passenger. He is piloting an airplane. He is piloting that airplane, again, undisputed, without the permission or authorization of the News Journal. He has never done that before.
That's a misleading statement, isn't it? There was no discovery taken of the News Journal.
There was no
affidavit or statement by anybody representing or who could bind the News Journal that what Mr. Amy did was forbidden. I mean, aren't you really saying that there's no affirmative evidence one way or the other that the News Journal gave its okay in advance to piloting the plane?
I believe the record supports affirmatively that Mr. Amy stated under oath that he did not get the prior approval of the News Journal for the flight to Richmond, Virginia.
Right, but that's all the record shows. It doesn't show that DuPont would have disapproved it had there been a request for prior approval, or that DuPont, in fact, did disapprove any request for reimbursement or took the position after the fact that the piloting the plane was unauthorized. It's outside the scope.
There is nothing in the record, Your Honor, that addresses what the News Journal's representative has to say on the matter, because, as the court has noted, the News Journal, neither party deposed any representative of the News Journal per se on the record that was presented to the Superior Court. What I was saying, though, and I believe the record supports, was that Mr. Amy himself admitted he did not have prior approval for that flight, and nor did he have prior approval to use an airplane. Again, this is not an airplane that was supplied by the News Journal. It wasn't authorized by the News Journal. Mr. Amy procured the plane from his cousin. It was a private airplane, a general aviation airplane, that in the midst of this assignment, it was decided to use. Initially,
Is there a record that establishes that there is a procedure by which anyone who's being sent to a location to cover something for the News Journal has to submit something saying, here's how I'm going to get there. Here's the form of transportation I'm taking. Do we have any record on any of those things?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe we do. Mr. Amy did not provide any such information during his deposition, nor has he provided any such information in an affidavit of record. What we do know, Your Honor, is that the News Journal at the time of this incident employed 7 staff photographers. We do know that there was, again, by Mr. Amy, there was no requirement or job duty to have an aviation license. None of the, as far as he knew, none of the other photographers had an aviation license. So that is what we do know, that it was not part of his job duties, and not only on the time of this incident, but Mr. Amy in the record also admitted he was never paid for piloting an airplane by the News Journal at any time. And that is basically the
So if I understand you, what you're saying is that there's no record as to what procedure was followed by members of the staff when they had to go places in terms of the type of transportation they could or couldn't take, whether they had to get prior permission or anything like that. There's just no record of any of that, right?
There is no record that addresses that, particularly through a representative of the News Journal.
Well, in any fashion, there's
That's correct. There's
okay.
Mr. Amy did not address that.
And that what we have in terms of your client's claim is the theory that even though the decedent received workers' compensation benefits, that would merely be based upon the fact that the decedent was working within his job description when he was covering this event.
That's correct.
And that his death was related to that. But that there still could be a claim against the pilot because although the pilot also was employed by the News Journal and also was covering this event, the claim is based upon his capacity as a pilot and not on his capacity as another staff member on the News Journal.
That's correct, Your Honor. In fact, even not as another passenger. In theory, both of them could have been on a commercial flight as passengers traveling to Richmond, Virginia. That isn't this case. This case is Mr. Amy took it upon himself to act as a pilot in command of a private aviation aircraft. And during that those activities as a pilot, which again in the record it's undisputed, the FAA cited his conduct on a night in question as a violation of FAA regulations as a pilot that led to Mr. Murphy's demise. Now, and your, I guess going back to your question, Justice Berger, if I may, this idea of estoppel, I would just mention that in the footnotes of the Grabowski case, there is mention of a case called Dockham, which involved a restaurant situation where a waitress was assaulted by the manager. And in that opinion, both the lower court and on affirmance by this court found that even though the person was eligible for workers' compensation benefits, the conduct of the manager was an issue for the jury to decide because in grabbing the person and holding them and whether or not forcibly stuffing food in her mouth, was that business-related or was that generated from a personal animosity or personal interest? And this court affirmed a jury verdict against that third-party co-employee, and yet that person received workers' comp benefits. And there was an argument, especially in the lower court, of this estoppel, that you can't have workers' comp benefits and a third-party claim. And yet the award to the victim related to the co-employee was affirmed by this court in an opinion order of yours. So when you look at the Groves case, which is the foundation of the of this analysis, you look at Dockham and then you look at Grabowski, the mere fact that someone is injured within the scope of their employment does not foreclose them from proving that the conduct of a co-employee is outside the scope of their employment. And that's what we're We're asking that that matter at least be allowed to go to trial and be submitted to a jury in this case, as it was in the Dockham case.
Does the record reflect whether the workers' compensation was paid pursuant to an agreement, or by some, was there a hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the record indicates that there were agreements. I can represent there was never a hearing. There were never any factual findings made by the Industrial Accident Board. It was simply by agreement of the News Journal and on behalf of Mr. Murphy. The present matter presents an unusual situation in this sense. With this recent ruling by in the Grabowski case and the outlining of a four-prong analysis that should be done in determining whether a co-employee is acting outside the scope or course of their employment, the lower court in this case, of course, didn't have the benefit of this court's ruling since it only occurred a few weeks ago. And if you look at the lower court's analysis, it seemed to be saying that if Mr. Murphy was an employee within the scope of his employment, well, then so was Mr. Amy, and did not analyze the difference between someone being a mere passenger and someone piloting an airplane, someone who's a photographer by his job duty. So the question would be, should this court, because presently before the court this matter can be reviewed on a de novo basis, this court can look at the record and determine whether or not applying the most recent standard announced in Grabowski, whether or not this matter should go to trial, or the court could remand this matter with instructions to the lower court. And, of course, the court can do almost anything it chooses. I'm just suggesting two avenues. But it could remand the case and ask the lower court to consider the facts in light of our ruling in Grabowski and apply the factors in Grabowski and determine whether or not this matter should go to trial. I only raise the possibility of remand for that purpose because such a remand and using the Grabowski criteria would also give the lower court the opportunity and, frankly, the parties to expand the record and if it's deemed necessary, take a deposition of a News Journal representative to expand the record. Again, only recently, after the argument in this case, this court held in the Seaford Golf and Country Club case that when there was disputes about the meaning of documents regarding the transfer of land and restrictions, this court, notwithstanding that all the parties said there's no dispute as to the facts, this court found that there was ambiguity and remanded and strongly suggested that the drafters should be deposed to find out what the true intention of the parties were. And I think in that vein, it's been suggested that perhaps a News Journal representative could be similarly deposed in this case on remand. But I do think that the court has to deal with the Grabowski case and utilize those four factors. And in utilizing those four factors, I believe this court would find on the basis of the existing record that there are material issues of fact in dispute and that this case should be submitted to a jury for a factual determination of whether or not Mr. Amy, as a pilot of a private airplane, was acting within the course and scope of his employment. And with the court's permission, I'll reserve the remaining portion of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I welcome the opportunity to be back here again. What we are looking at, as I view this, is what hat was Gary Amy wearing at the time this accident occurred. Mr. Fletcher contends he was wearing the hat of a third-party tortfeasor, not someone who was acting at all within the course and scope of employment. And I think that In fact, on the record, the appellant has a tough hurdle to clear there because there are statements of record which I believe answer a number of the questions that were raised during Mr. Fletcher's argument. I mean, first of all, we know that Mr. Murphy and Mr. Emmy are in the employ of the News Journal. They are co-employees. So the next question is, the activity in which resulted in this accident, was that an activity that is considered part of the scope and course of employment? And as this court turned to Professor Larson in the Grabowski case, likewise, looking at what Professor Larson has written about traveling employees, he states that it's in Chapter 25 that employees whose work entails travel away from their employer's premises, and that's what occurred here. There's no question this is one of those special assignments out of state. It's generally considered to be within the course of his or her employment continuously during the trip, except where there is a distinct departure on a personal errand. So that in the act of traveling, Professor Larson, and numerous cases, such as the Shoal case in your Superior Court, have held that traveling on a special assignment for an employer is an act of employment. And, of course, implicit in that, in the act of traveling, whether you are driving a car, flying an airplane, you are carrying out that aspect of your employment assignment. And what we must remember, as was testified to a record in this case, nowhere, at no time, did the News Journal ever specify that when you travel, you had to travel a certain way, you had to stay overnight, you could not come home. In fact, as we know on the record, on the 2 days before this, on the 12th of March, and actually into the morning of the 13th, when Mr. Emmy and Mr. Murphy were in Richmond for the prior game, and they had driven back, it was a decision made almost spontaneously to let's drive home. And as Justice Jacobs, I believe, referred to, is there a distinction between driving and flying that Mr. Fletcher conceded?
Let me interrupt you here.
Yes.
Forget about the distinction between driving and flying. What if Mr. Murphy had flown down on a commercial airliner and the airliner crashed?
He's within the course and scope of his employment. He would be entitled to workers' compensation benefits.
Fine,
and the parties responsible for operating the aircraft are not his. They aren't co-employees.
So he would be able to sue the airline,
yes,
for the death as
correct.
Well.
That's correct.
Now, if so, what makes this different is the fact that although they were both working in the sense that they were going down there to cover this event, one of the two employees was doing something in addition to just working for the News Journal. One of the two employees was also being an airline pilot. I mean, he was piloting the plane, right?
Well, that would go back, if we could make the analogy to Justice Jacobs' question about driving. Would that mean that Mr. Emmy, in driving the car that night, if he had had an accident, was acting as a professional chauffeur? There is testimony, and the court had asked questions about what the testimony was about use of aircraft and reimbursement and being paid. And rather than recall what may have been discussed, I'd like to read to the court the 2 pages of testimony, because I think it's at pages 59 and 60 of the record. That's B59 and B60. When they talk about driving the car, were you paid by the News Journal for driving to and from the event? Yes, by the mile. By the mile, reimbursed by the mile. But for your services of driving, were you paid anything? Yes, we're considered working hours as soon as we leave to go on the assignment until we get back. Question. And the same thing when you flew down there. Were those also working hours for your transportation down and back? Yes. So there is not the distinction that Mr. Fletcher attempted to draw between driving and flying because he said they were on the clock either way.
But isn't it true that I think all of us can drive, but it takes a special skill set to fly an airplane? And doesn't that special skill set create enough of a deviation from the norm to create a factual question for a jury to resolve as to whether it's within the scope of employment?
As far as a special skill set, there's a required licensure through the FAA, which this gentleman actually had not just a private pilot's license, but had a commercial license and was qualified as a commercial aviator. But the fact that he, as I read the restatement, Section 239 and other workers' compensation decisions, the act engaged in has to be something so extraordinary that it's not reasonably expected. Now, in this case, getting to Grabowski, I draw a parallel. Grabowski, they had a prohibition, written prohibition against engaging in horseplay. In this case, not only did the news journal not have any type of prohibition suggesting that this is some type of, you know, requiring an ordinary or extraordinary skill set or other extraordinary conditions, but the testimony went on when he had just been asked about driving down and then flying, so that the same compensation would apply whether you drove or flew. Is that right? Yes. What about using the airplane? Had you on prior occasions used an aircraft to carry out any of your job activities with the news journal? Now, it did not ask whether he piloted it, but I would suggest that we put it in juxtaposition, having just been asked about paid for driving and paid for flying the aircraft. And the subsequent question is about his using the aircraft. It's implicit that what is being talked about is his flying the airplane. And his answer to that is yes. And on those occasions where he used another aircraft, were you able to charge the expenses related to that flight back to the news journal? Yes. And was there a standard form for submitting expense vouchers to the newspaper, when either a car was used or an airplane was used to recover that expense? Yes. And was it your intention to submit the expense voucher for the use of this airplane for the trip on the 14th of March? Yes.
Do those questions make it clear, that is the phraseology, use of an airplane, that what we're talking about is a private aircraft is distinguished from flying in a commercial airliner as a passenger?
Your Honor, it's perhaps I should have been more distinct in my questioning of the witness on that point. I can represent to the court that if on remand, the testimony will be that it was a private airplane used as cousin's airplane on a number of occasions. Use it for photography. He'd fly up himself. You don't use a commercial airplane to go up and...
I'm sorry, is that...
You don't use a commercial airplane to go up and fly to do photography work. If it would be remanded, I can represent to the court that if that is the issue, then it'll come back up with that of record to clear this up. Because
Wait a second. What are you saying is going to be clear, that the news journal allowed him to take a private plane to take photographs?
Yes, the testimony as to what these prior reimbursements were for the aircraft that he flew himself, so it would be him piloting. They were aware that he piloted the airplane before. They reimbursed him so that he could pay his cousin for the cost of the fuel in the airplane. So that's what the reimbursement vouchers were. To the extent that the record is incomplete on that, I suggest that the record, when you read it in the form in which the testimony was given, it's implicit that he was using his own aircraft and putting the vouchers in for that.
Well, there are really at least two possibilities in that score. One is that he hired an aircraft together with a pilot. That's one way to use a private aircraft. The other is to use to pilot the private aircraft.
And if the court deems that, and similar to Grabowski that there should be a remand for a specific consideration. On that case, it's a remand for the application of a legal test established by Professor Larson. I would believe that on a remand on these questions that we will fill in the blocks that will bring us back here with summary judgment in our favor.
So Mr. Fletcher is correct that the record doesn't precisely support the proposition that the News Journal knew because it had approved either before or after the fact that Mr. Amy was piloting a private aircraft in the course of his employment.
I agree the record does not in specific words state that. I would suggest again in the reading of this that would avoid the time and delay of remand that it would it's in there. But that is the record we have, and if the court deems it necessary for remand. But I was part of, in reading Grabowski, I looked at parallel between that case and this case. And there, I mean, when you look at the activity in Grabowski, it's horseplay, which generally is not considered part of work, where Professor Larson says travel on assignment is part of employment. Again, in Grabowski, they had a prohibition against it. Here, at least the record is implicit on that the employer knew and paid for this kind of travel of piloting a private aircraft. Again, in Grabowski, the downtime, this horseplay, does it benefit the employer at all? In this case, the employer would be saved the cost of having to lodge the employees for the evening. Rather than having that expense, they could fly back. Again, when they're on the clock, when they're on assignment, if they're back in Dover and waiting for that, they could then fly down in the afternoon. They're not on the clock all morning down there receiving pay. So there is benefit to the employer.
I'm confused on the record then. I thought there was some suggestion in the record or at the last argument that they didn't even turn in their rental car or check out of the hotel rooms, that they were strictly going home for the evening and they intended to return the next day.
I think it said they did not turn in the rental car. They were going to come back. They did not go to the hotel. They were at the facility, I think, and the assignment had been completed, and that's when Mr. Murphy said, let's go back home. And that's another distinction between Grabowski and the our case, is that in Grabowski you had an employee who this activity was foisted upon him. I mean, he was apparently in the bathroom doing an activity that, as part of your employment, you go use the restroom. He was set upon and bound up and was injured. In this case, it was Mr. Murphy who initiated the idea of flying in the first place. And then on the evening in question, when they had arrangements with a rental car and everything to stay overnight, again brought up the idea of using the airplane. And again, to address the point of whether this is such an unusual activity, here you have...
Tell us why this isn't a jury question.
When you say this is not a jury, whether this is an unusual activity? Well, I think the court, the lower court, took judicial notice that use of airplanes are a part of everyday life. I mean, if you go on the Aircraft Owner and Pilots Association website, you'll find there are about 250,000 of private aircraft around. They fly 25 million plus hours a year. They're used, there are airports surrounding Dover. From Wilmington down through Seaford and Laurel, there are small strips where these planes fly in and out of. We're in the days nowadays where people use this frequently.
Going back to our cases, what Mr. Fletcher says is, if we apply our case law, this is not something that you would reasonably expect the photographer on a newspaper staff to do. You're marshaling facts to suggest, at least as far as Mr. Amy's concerned, it could reasonably be expected. My question is, if both sides have facts to support their argument that it could or could not reasonably be expected, why isn't that a jury question?
Well, as I read the restatement, the requirement is that it be something that is unauthorized or so unusual.
Right, I'll go with so unusual.
Okay.
Why isn't the so unusual a jury question?
Because I would say that in this world today, in 2003 when the accident occurred, the use of general aviation aircraft, because they are so prolific, is not an unusual thing, Your Honor. It's just it's a part of everyday life. They're there. They're flying around. They're transporting people for millions of hours.
You're not making a distinction between the use of aircraft being usual and one of your co-employees being the pilot. And that's the distinction Mr. Fletcher's trying to make.
Well, I can just cite to the numerous cases around the country that have found that where a person is flying with a co-employee, another fellow employee that has a license, that they have applied workers' compensation benefits in those cases.
Well, I've looked at all of those cases in anticipation of today's argument, and most of them, they seem to be a company plane. Tell me the case you found where it was not a company plane.
I don't have a specific site to that. I could get it or try to get it for you. But if it's a jury question and the court deems it that, then, yes, we'll try it to the jury then. But I would say that on the not just the record that exists and the fact that his employer had allowed this in the past would suggest that it was not something unusual.
No, I understand. I wasn't trying to suggest an answer. I was suggesting that you make the argument here you would have made to the trial court, and the argument is, as a matter of law, Mr. Fletcher has no facts at all to support his contention this is unusual. Therefore, as a matter of law, this should never go to a jury. And I'm suggesting Mr. Fletcher contends he has enough facts to make it a jury question, and he starts with the example that these two men did 100 different things together, including ones out of state, and Mr. Amy wasn't the pilot. And so he, if we take that one out of 100 as his exhibit A, so to speak, he says, that's my factual predicate for saying it's unusual.
Well, let's take a parallel to that. They have 100 assignments that they're on, and they travel by various means. But on just one of those assignments, they drive together, or that Mr. Murphy takes the bus, and Mr. Amy has driven, and at one time they drive back. Does that make it so unusual that it would then be a conduct that would be outside the normal scope and course of employment activity? I suggest not. So that paralleling that to flying, I think the answer should be the same.
Well, but at this point, we don't really have a record on this, do we? Because if I understand correctly, all we've got is that these two gentlemen didn't fly together regularly, right?
We know that they didn't fly together regularly.
Okay.
But the record is not anything beyond what I've read to the court concerning the use of this aircraft or similar aircraft on prior occasions. And if the record has to be expanded for that, we can go back and do that.
And it would be your position that after the record is expanded along the lines you anticipate because you know what the facts are, at that point there would be no remaining issue of fact with respect to whether this was within the scope of employment.
That is correct, and I believe we would go back to the Superior Court and ask them then for summary judgment again. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Gary Amy's attorneys have argued to the court that flying a plane by a photographer employed by the News Journal for it to be actionable under these facts has to be so extraordinary. And I would argue that that's not what the case law of this court has established. Under in Grove, the case held that you have to look to see whether or not the conduct is reasonable or unexpected or expected given the person's employment. We have a staff photographer. Was it expected that he would get his cousin's airplane and take a co-employee to Virginia? The facts are 100 times they've had these assignments, and not once was an airplane piloted by Mr. Amy. The most recent test that the court enunciated in Grabowski says that you should look to the extent to which the conduct in question has become an accepted part of employment. Yet there is nothing to show that in regard to these two gentlemen, flying an airplane was an accepted part of their employment. It also says you should consider the extent to which the nature of the employment may be expected to include the conduct in question. And what is there about a staff photographer position at the News Journal that would expect one to be flying general aviation aircraft? The fact is there were 7 photographers. None of them had a license other than Mr. Amy. None of them were required to fly and pilot a plane.
Thank you, Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement and adjourn.
Bye.